Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show me your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
All right, time for another installment of It's My House, and it may as well be It's My Town today. I've done over 2,000 of these It's My House podcasts over the last 8 years, almost 9 years next month. And I would say this is the most anticipated one that I've looked forward to, particularly because they cover a lot of Claude Anderson's some of the things that he mentions in the intro of the show. So let's get right to it. We have representatives from the Freedom Georgia Initiative, and let me open up some mics here. Renee, 678, your mic is open. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning.
We got a couple other people out. Area codes haven't recognized the 708 and the 267. But we'll start off with you, Renee, and I'll open up. Matter of fact, I'm open. Let's see. You know what? Before I do that.
Yeah,
let's tell us about. Okay, let's get them on 708 and then 267, I'm assuming, is also part of the initiative.
Yes, I'll open up that mic. That's our president and CEO. That's our other co-founder and CEO.
Okay. Well, let's start off with. For people who don't, and matter of fact, let me explain the title of today's podcast, particularly for people who are not familiar with the Freedom Georgia Initiative or the Black Township Movement. We've covered Black Townships on this podcast over the years. We visited some historical Black Townships, and right after slavery, for those who don't know, even before slavery ended, there were former slaves or slaves who had manumitted themselves, and they started what was known back then as Freedom Villages. And I think there's probably about 800 of them around today. Most people don't even know about them. I'm in Florida right now, and I'm 45 minutes away from me is Eatonville, Florida. Eatonville is a historic mm-hmm. black township, which is over 100 years old. And we've gone out to Oklahoma and visited three black townships out there. Way Texas had a prolific amount of them. However, in 2022, what I've noticed is there's some other people that are buying land, but no one stands out, at least in the radar that I'm looking at, other than the Freedom Georgia Initiative. So let's get the backstory. How did the Freedom Georgia Initiative even start?
Well, it started through all the racial trauma that we have experienced in the last few years. And I think 2020 just took a toll on everybody, being that we were in the middle of a pandemic and no one was working. So we had no other choice but to sit and watch everything that was going on. And so we were kind of suffering from it, being three black women with husbands and sons and grandsons. And so we were thinking, like, what can we do as women to help our community, help our husbands, protect our sons? And so a post started going viral about how you can buy a town for the cost of a New York City apartment. And Ashley and I, she's a realtor, Ashley and I took a tour to the town. We did a lot of research. And then Ashley discovered that there were parcels of land for sale. And so we took a tour, and the last piece of land we went to, we stepped out and we got chills immediately, and we was like, hey, we need to buy this land. And so we knew it would be a big project, so we just decided to get a few of our friends and family involved. And on the ride home, we was just talking about how what things that we can do, the things that we can create, the people that we will want to bring on. And that's how the Freedom George Initiative was founded.
Okay. Now, did you guys live near the town, or, I mean, were you living in another city in Georgia, or were you out of state, or what?
We live in Atlanta. We all live in, like, metro Atlanta. Some of the families live out of town. But Ashley and I live in metro Atlanta, and we took the two-hour drive to Toonsboro, and it was a beautiful drive, and that's when we discovered the land.
All right. And how much was it going, if you don't mind sharing, how much was it going for per acre?
Well, we don't share that information.
This is Ashley. I'm the realtor. At the time, it was a different market. So I want to let people be very clear that the price that we pay is not today's price. And that's why we don't usually share what we paid, because we would hate for people to go out here thinking that they're going to find 97 acres for the amount of money we paid in 2020, because it's just not going to be the case.
Understood. Understood. I've experienced the same thing. You got together, and I mean, did you use social media, or how did you do your warm market for recruiting potential prospects to go in? Because you went from what, 2 to 3 people to what, 19 families, I believe.
Well, Ashley and I have always been business partners, and Laura and Ashley worked together a lot, and then I met Laura, and we all just sort of clicked. So we knew that us three were going to be involved, and then Ashley picked a few of her friends, I picked a few of my friends, and we sent out an email. Like, we were very strategic in choosing, like, who we wanted to be involved with. These were conversations that we were already having with a few of our friends. So everyone we chose was someone that we knew or was related to us in some way.
All right. Well, that's using your social capital. Now, did you initially, the people that were that you emailed? I guess you took them out on a tour of the 96 to 97 acres.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So after we initially sent out an email, we scheduled a Zoom call, and we invited all of the different people we thought would be a good fit for us in our project. And those who were interested, we went out to the land, and we all toured it, and we checked it out, and folks who could come did. Some folks didn't. There are some people who have, I don't even think, have ever seen the land. Have the cooks ever seen the land at all?
He was at the Black Camp out. He saw it. Chevy didn't see it.
Okay. So we really pulled it together with the fact that we had a level of trust and a level of knowledge that, you know, this piece of land, when we checked it out, it was going to be able to meet our needs for what we wanted, which is we're a simple community. We wanted to be able to build some retirement homes and do some recreational things, some farming, and the land conformed to all of that.
Oh, yeah, because 97 acres, and for people to get a visual on an acre is about the size of a football field. So that's quite a bit of land. So I guess you can do homes or housing, farming. The land, was it zoned residential or agricultural or recreational?
Yes. Well, the land was zoned all three. It's in an unincorporated part of Wilkinson County. So we are able to be able to do agriculture, residential, and recreational because of the county and the way that they currently allow for you to do your property. So they don't have zoning laws and ordinances that are as strict as traditional urban centers are.
You're right about that. Yeah, I tell people, go rural. That's where the action is. Of course, most people, but you got to have a pioneer mindset to get into that. But now, from what I've read or I saw, I watched your YouTube channel, and I think you're up to, 502 acres now?
That's correct.
how did it go from the original 97 with 19 families up to the 502 acres that you're at now?
So this is Ashley Scott. I'm a realtor, and one of the things that we did was got a lot of calls from people who were interested in buying our land. And, of course, we had just bought it. We had no interest in selling it. But in the area within the 97 acres, there's a street called Little Sandy Creek. On that same street, on the opposite side of the street, there's 404 acres that went for sale. And we were lucky enough to have a managing partner and someone who had the cash to invest as a gap funder so that we could purchase that additional property so we could subdivide it and then be able to sell the land to other people who had this vision, this pioneering vision, like you said, to be able to be a part of what we were doing.
All right. Well, you guys must be living right. Because things and stars are lining up right. What type of, now, I've run across people that would like to do what you guys are doing. And maybe not on a larger scale, but, you know, maybe 10 or 20 acres, something like that. But they're just talking. What was it, in your opinions, that it got people, I mean, you know, because you're walking your talk. So what did you do that some of these other groups that they would like to do, but they haven't done? I mean, they're talking, but they haven't, nobody's taken any action to buy anything yet. So what were your suggestions for people to do go?
This is Laura Cooper. I am the CEO of the Freedom Georgia Initiative. And I would say that what we did was execute. We put a plan together. Ashley and Renee put a nice proposal and some things together for everybody to see. We put the plan together, and we began to execute. And that's one of the things I think that we have been good about with regard to obstacles that may come in our way. You know, we got with a lot of thought leaders and different people, different experts in different fields of area of development, and we started having conversations so that we could, you know, make the best decisions according to this process. But I think the most important thing was we put a plan together and we executed.
All right. Now, let me ask you this. Now, what about I'll give it a backstory on this. There's a couple, I don't know them, but they're on YouTube, purchased 4 acres of land, I guess, somewhere in Missouri. And their plan was to make it into a tiny house village. Now, from what I get for just by watching their videos, now, what happened was it never happened. They owned the 4 acres, but the city council or whatever in that particular town of Missouri shot it down with whatever they were trying to do. So I was looking at, you know what it sounds like, I mean, from the videos, that they didn't know enough about, or they hadn't developed the political capital to do what they wanted to do in that particular town. And even before that, they probably bought property that wasn't zoned. Like, for instance, I personally buy property that's zoned agricultural. Why? Because essentially I have more freedom to do what I want to do. I also look for places that have, you know, like really small populations, like under 400 people. Once again, because I have more freedom to do what I want to do with that piece of land. So with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, because you've got quite a bit of land, and I guess things go in stages. I guess at the beginning, people might call it a settlement. But then if you want to have, I guess, more government or services, depending on the county that you're in the United States, you know, do you want to become a municipality where you have your own mayor, city council, that type of thing, police force? Go ahead, I'm listening.
So to kind of go back to where you were, Two of the things that we did that were very strategic actually identified unincorporated land. So we are in Wilkinson County, but we're in unincorporated Wilkinson County, which gives us a little more leeway with the decisions that we make about how we want to develop this land. There's really not a whole bunch of rules. We're kind of making our own rules. And then the second thing we did was go to the county and establish a relationship, tell them what we plan to do, kind of laid out the plans and, you know, just expressed our desire to help them as well. So we knew that our initiative would definitely, you know, grow their community forward, get them some more rooftops, get some more recreation going on in the county. So we hit their hot buttons and built a relationship with them in order to, you know, make sure that they supported our project.
All right, that makes sense. What about security? Is anybody living on the land right now, you know, just keeping an eye out, like a groundskeeper, so to speak? Just, you know, make sure, you know, kids don't come through and do mischief.
At the moment, no one lives on the land, but we do visit regularly. Like, Ashley gets tours on a weekly basis. We do monthly maintenance. So someone's always there at some point in time, but no one lives out there full-time at the moment.
All right. What about now you're off the grid right now. And when I say off the grid, meaning I'm taking it for granted there's no electrical, no municipal water, nothing like that. Do you plan on keeping it developing it as an off-the-grid community using solar to generate electricity, people doing their own wells, people harvesting rainwater? That way nobody gets an electric bill, or depends on how you're going to set up, I mean, your future plans if you go with a municipal charter, where your municipality that you create has a water company and a power company, where that's one of the ways, or a couple of ways that the city will, or the town that you develop eventually, you know, will generate income. Any talks on that level yet?
So, yeah, like you discussed, going in phases. So it starts with that, you know, that settlement phase, as you expressed. So in our first phase with our initial property owners, they are absolutely off-grid. So, and there is the opportunity to go on-grid if that's what they choose to do, because at the street there is currently Oconee EMC, which is actually a cooperative utility. In rural areas, they often have co-ops for utilities because the major electric companies are not interested in spending the money on the infrastructure to get out there. So there's special tax districts, bonds, different things that people collectively can do in their unserved areas to, as a cooperative, bring utilities to the space. And that's what has happened in Wilkinson County. And what we would like to do is to utilize that cooperative to sell any energy we create through our solar back to the grid. And that'll just allow, one, through a power purchase agreement, revenue streams for the community, and it would allow for our citizens and those who are generating power to be able to see a profit from it as well. And that is pretty much our aim with what we're building, is to create revenues that benefit the people, the residents, the citizens of our community, and not just the corporations that use their capital to set up monopolies, right? So we want to figure out through group economics and through the practices of our ancestors how we can stay off-grid, stay self-sufficient, be able to be sustainable in our own economic, you know, machine. And all of those things, the energy, the food, it all plays a role. And so our aim is to stay as off-grid as possible, but really off-grid in the mindset of we want to be able to generate our own revenues or save our own profits by charging lower rates to our citizens. We want, at the end of the day, the ultimate decision-making power, right? And so that's our aim, is always to do that and to create that.
All right, you're talking my language for sure. Now, you're starting off with families, and I imagine you have all age ranges and generations. So taking a page out of the Amish and Mennonite scrapbook, how would you be building your houses? Are you going to learn? I mean, are you going to build them yourselves or contract those out to some other people?
So the good thing is we have the opportunity to do both. That's the great thing about being in an unincorporated area. So everyone who has purchased into the property has their own 2 acres or 6 acres. And if they want to build themselves, they can. We just luckily enough got into a we have a strategic partner that will actually, for $3,000, he teaches you how to build your house from the ground up. He only does 10 people at a time when he teaches this class, but this is the types of resources that we have so that we can be self-sufficient. But we got to also realize, like, everybody's not going to get out and build their own house. And in that case, we do have black contractors, general contractors, builders who are able to build for our community. So whether that's a shipping container home through Mobu Enterprises and Jessica Lewis, the shipping container lady, or if they're interested in a barn dominium, or if they want to do a traditional stick and frame build from a traditional builder, we have people on our team who have already been vetted and who are approved for our project to do that. We like to give people options because that's what freedom really is about. You don't have to do this one thing. It needs to be aesthetically pleasing. It needs to meet our environmental friendliness standards, but it doesn't have to look like a cookie cutter, same house, same style. It just needs to meet the safety codes and the environmental codes that our universal building codes already have. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We just want to give people the access to land and the access to vetted black businesses and opportunities to really live a more self-sufficient, sustainable lifestyle.
All right. Well, you're doing a good job with it from what I can say. Now, you officially, how long ago is 2023? So, I mean, 2022. So this is, you guys went out there for about a year and a half, 2 years. All right. Well, you've done a whole lot in that amount of time. So you have, you have your tours, and then you have Zoom calls as well. Any other forms of communication?
I mean, podcasts, you know, different, you know, these different methods when we talk, when we have a live opportunity to talk to a larger audience. But for the most part, email, I mean, the usual email. We do a mailing list for the people that are actually either on our board or a part of the community. So we're, you know, constantly growing on those efforts to, you know, as certain situations roll out and certain information come available, we use those resources as well.
Okay. All right. Generational wealth. I imagine the youngins were, you know, that are out there of different ages, teenagers or preteens. Anything special set aside for them yet as far as learning how to, I mean, well, you're all going through a growing process right now, a learning process, I should say. So how are they getting involved right now?
Well, through our workforce development objectives that we have a lot of programs that we plan to initiate for our youth that will allow them to learn different trades, whether it's agriculture, whether it's in tech. Those opportunities will be provided. We often offer entertainment and recreation as far as them coming out with their families and being able to be able to camp and enjoy, you know, just the different events that we put together. And then we also, you know, plan to just have different efforts that we do in the community as a whole. So we always have the children in mind because they are the future. We want to see them take this thing to the next level after we get them a foundation in place.
Now, I've noted on one of the videos I watched, there were a bunch of tents out there. There was some type of a camp out. What was that about? And do you do that on a regular?
So we have our annual event, and it depends because with COVID going and coming and all the things, we try to do events regularly. We do the big black camp out. We also allow people to rent the space to do their own events as well. And so that's something that we wanted to really encourage big groups like, you know, melanated camp out. So we do events. We have them that we host them. We also have other people host them, like we had our brother Ross Kofi from On the Farm host an event in conjunction with the National Black Food and Justice Alliance where we did the Free the Land Stewardship Camp Out. And so we're constantly doing, we do a Juneteenth event, we do our Big Black Camp Out around Labor Day, and then we're adding different events, and then our friends and different organizations that we're strategically partnered with also are welcome to host events. So we constantly are doing things. We taught during the Free the Land conference that we had how to build earth homes and use earth bags to build your own property. So there are so many ways that we get to utilize the land to explore, and events are a way that we do that, to be able to teach skills to not just young people but to seasoned people who are transitioning from, you know, corporate America and from urban lifestyles, who want to try homesteading and who want to try to build farmsteads and places for their family to be more self-sufficient. That is what we use, and that's what you see is a lot of our camping events. But that specific event was our big black camp out. That was our first event. We had a lot of footage and drone footage taken of that event because it was almost like historical. It was the first time we had any kind of an event on our black-owned land that we are building this community on. So that's what that was.
Okay, we got some other questions, some callers that I probably want to talk to. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. they would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, these your cars? I said, no. He said, I just bought this house, man. I said, all right, that's what's up. He was like, you know whose cars it is? He said, no. He said, well, I bought the house, not the cars. Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, we finna fix this house. I said, what kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, these my friends. The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
Ladies, I have to apologize for the language, but the guy makes not, I mean, he, I think he makes the point that many hands
that's
make
passion.
Like work.
That is passion, baby. That is passion.
Yeah,
yeah, I was about to say, I was in here going to church. That was some good stuff right there.
Yeah.
Like, I was half in here with the brother,
like,
let's go.
I'll send you the video of that off of YouTube. But now, obviously, you guys have many hands made light work, and congrats. I mean, there's not a bigger word that I can think of, because you guys are really working some miracles out there. But let me ask you this. A lot of people, culturally speaking, and it, you know, anybody can do what you guys are doing, but everybody hasn't done. Because I've run across other groups, as I mentioned earlier in this live stream, that they've been talking for the last 2 or 3 years, and they haven't been able to get off of square one. And it might be, in some cases, trust issues. Some people might have a false perception of whoever. How did you guys get past that? What can you tell other people? What can you tell them to get unstuck?
Success, well, love, speed is all I was going to say. Go ahead.
No, here's the thing. It's mindset. It's mindset and grace, extending each other grace as much as possible, not creating a vision and letting that vision swell so much in your heart that none of the rest of it matters, because, you know, we have our moments still 2 years later, you know, where those trust issues and things like that come up. But for me, I'm a person that when I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. So once we put our foot out there and said to the world, this is what we're doing, I feel like we have no other choice but to complete the task. Choose nobody got. I don't care who mad about what the next day. I'm going to say, hey, I'm sorry. I apologize if you didn't take this the right way or this didn't happen that way. And I'm going to move on, and I'm going to keep pressing the gas and doing what I said I was going to do. So I think if people can get to that point with each other, that it's about the vision. It ain't about your feelings. It's about the vision. And you got to get behind the person who had the vision in order to see it through. You know what I mean? So
right.
It's like we
right.
have to – we have to put ourselves to the side and get behind, not be afraid to get behind somebody and fully and completely support them without having our attitudes and stuff shift the narrative every time something don't go our way. And then kick the emotions out of it. Emotions will ruin a situation like this, because that emotional, you can't be emotional in business. Emotions and business don't go together at all.
Right.
So you
right.
have to be able to distinguish between the two. When it's time for business, let's do business. Let's execute this plan. Let's stay focused. Let's get to the vision. Because at the end of the day, most of us are just struggling with the same type of stuff in our households. And most of the times it's money that's the main primary source. So if you can fix this, fix part of the problem where people feel a little more secure financially, they're more willing to listen, they're more willing to compromise, they're more willing to do what needs to be done.
Right, right. Did you, well, next question is, and if people have any questions out there, because I know people are taking notes, and I'm taking notes on my phone here, 619-768-2945, just press 1, and it will patch you in to the Freedom Georgia Initiative. Are you guys planning to put a school somewhere within Freedom, Georgia, that will teach people skills like how to build a house or, you know, drill a well or anything like that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, we are very excited. Oh, go ahead.
No, but you got it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so we are very excited about our Freedom Institute for Innovation and Culture, and that is an all-ages institute. So from our young people who need early childhood education to our seasoned citizens who are adult learners, we anticipate having curriculum for everything in life so that people can be holistic and we can really impact the culture around innovation and just all of the things, right? So one of the things we're really excited about is, yes, we'll be teaching carpentry skills, teaching through a partnership with a black electric vehicle maker, how to retrofit cars from being the traditional gas and diesel models to solar models, renewable energy models. There's some technology that is beyond me that they have where we can now power cars with just 3 gallons of gas. And like I said, this is a black electric vehicle company. And so we're really excited about taking these types of manufacturing industry companies and teaching our young people how to get these green jobs, these more technical jobs that for some reason, like you said, we started to feel like being able to build a house or put a well in the ground or farm term is beneath our culture, when really it is how we have an economic machine that gives us self-sufficiency and allows us to be self-determined as a group of people and as a group of citizens. And so we look forward to having the Freedom Institute for Innovation and Culture as that group gathering spot for knowledge, for us to have our own repository of information and new age information. Our HBCUs are hundreds of years old, and they don't have the necessary infrastructure that they should have to be able to be data centers and collections of information because they were built 100 years with white people's money, but that's another conversation. And we can build Freedom Institute for Innovation and Culture at the top of our technological advancement, right? And so that's what we're excited to do, and to put this opportunity for curiosity and creativity into the hands of all of our citizens who get the opportunity to live and work and educate themselves in freedom. And it doesn't have to be the same K through 12 system, because Wilkinson County, they got that. That's what they do. We are not of this world, but we're in this world, so we have to go with the way that our current state education system is set up. But we can create this institute that allows us to have our own culture, our own curriculum, our own programmatic curriculums that will allow us to train our citizens, our children, our elders, people who are interested in transitioning from different corporate career paths into our own strategic industries that we can control, whether that be like we're talking about this electric vehicle company, we're talking about solar, we're talking about our food systems, because these are the things that we've been spending money on every month forever. We're not going to stop spending money to have energy, to have electricity, to have broadband. We need these things for our quality of life. And the Freedom Institute for Innovation and Culture will be a mechanism to provide that to our citizens.
Malachi, you know how many years I've been waiting to meet somebody like you guys? I got into renewable energy and even tiny houses before the term was even coined, tiny houses, back in like 2003 or 2004. I was over in Europe, Germany to be specific. And then, because I'm a landlord, that's one of the hats I wear. So I discovered with having energy efficient houses, you can zero out your electricity, electric bills, stuff like that. So I came back over here to the States, and I did some radio shows in Pittsburgh and some other places, and I did a bunch of volunteer work, and oftentimes I was the only black person for years that I ran into. So I'm glad you guys are talking about electric vehicles and all that, and you mentioned earth bags and all that. If you haven't read the book already, I highly recommend it by Van Jones, The Green Collar Economy. What you guys are doing is what he wrote in that book, and this is before Obama got elected the first time. But it's the book is titled The Green Collar Economy by Van Jones, in case you haven't read it. Have you got now you mentioned earth bags. Are you familiar with earth ships?
Yes, there's a lot of studies on earth ships. Similar to you, 10 years ago, I've been studying earth ships. I've been studying time banking, just different ways to elevate and change how our collective culture currently functions. And that's why I loved exactly what your intermission guy was talking about, like 6-7, Hispanic folks in a day, an evening, fixed up a house. We can do that ourselves if we strategically and intentionally come together to do it. It doesn't take all that, to be honest, to be able to get together, build a earth ship, use recycled materials, make the plan, come together over a weekend, and everybody can have a house. And it can be the kind of home that heats itself because it's facing the proper direction so that the sun
is facing itself.
Yeah.
You're talking my language. I first learned about Earthships through an email. I was over in Germany, and a friend of mine who was stateside, he said, word of the day, Earthships. So I watched the video on YouTube, and then I came back over here, it was a 7-day retreat, and we built one Earthship from scratch, finished off another ship that another class started, and then we built an addition onto a barn from pallets. And then we learned a whole bunch of other stuff. When we got, you know, solar cooking, because solar cooking is a hobby of mine, but you're talking my language, because now there's one associate that I have out of Chicago. He's in the solar. He's up in age now. He's got some health issues, but I'm so glad of what you guys are doing. Now, let me put this out here. Once again, people, because we got our board filling up now, press one. Now, I've done over some of my regular followers. Next month will be 9 consecutive years of It's My House. And I've done over 2,100 of these podcasts. These ladies that I have on here right now, or I would say on a critical mass basis, they are demonstrating. They're not talking. They have demonstrated and are demonstrating what you can do to solve a lot of your personal finance problems or even social problems. I mean, it's not a silver bullet. It's not going to clear everything, but it can cure a whole lot of things. Now, a lot of people, when they talk about communities, they bring up two, Rosewood and Black Wall Street. Let's start off with Rosewood. Now, I'm in Florida, and I'm about maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours away from Rosewood. Rosewood, and we had Lizzie Jenkins on here a few years ago, who's a Rosewood historian. Rosewood, despite what John Singleton put out in the movie, was not a historical black township. There were 10 to 15 black households in Rosewood. But when they burnt that to the ground, they torched the whole town, including white folks. So it was black folks and white folks that ran into the swamps and or whatever, and they never rebuilt that. But it wasn't an official historical black township. Now, Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was founded by O.W. Gurley on 40 acres of land. Black Wall Street, the Greenwood District, was a neighborhood on 40 acres. So the ladies that we have on air right now that you guys can talk to and ask questions to directly, okay, they're doing actual town, okay? They started out with over double of what Black Wall Street had, and then now they're up to 502 acres. So my question is, because a lot of people, and I hate victim stories, but what do you guys have in place to prevent a possible, matter of fact, let me put this out before I complete that question. Let me remind people again, at the same time that Black Wall Street happened in Oklahoma in 1921, there were over 50 other black communities in the state of Oklahoma that have never experienced racial violence. At that time, there were 50 black municipalities, and there were other, now I've been to Taft, Oklahoma. I've got a house in Taft, Oklahoma. I've been to Summit, Oklahoma, and I've been to Tallahassee, Oklahoma, which is the oldest black township in the whole state. But there are other black communities out there that have never been touched. And from my point of view is, they built these townships and areas where, even in 2022, going into 2023, I don't even know how they found those places back then, because I wonder how they find them now. Because you can drive through Taft, Oklahoma, and you got to go. I don't know how. I've been to Summit, Oklahoma twice, broad daylight, and I don't even know how I got there. So strategically they put these towns, these other 50-plus communities, and then Blackjack, Oklahoma, which is right next to Taft, Oklahoma, which is a municipality. But Blackjack is in an unincorporated area, and I haven't found it on the radar yet. So my question to you guys is, for safety or prevention, do you guys have anything in place, or we're just living in a different time zone on how to, you know, how to protect what you guys, because you guys got 502 acres, you're balling out there, which is good.
I think part of it is making sure that we are strategic with regard to our structuring of our, you know, of everything that we structure centered around the land. And that means, you know, just making sure that we're protecting it with trust and, you know, different things like that. I also feel like we are in a different time just based on all the climate of the world. We have a lot of people you still see that are heavily racist and, you know, they have a open floor now with social media. But just as many as people as we have that's like that, we have some of those people that are still on that are white, black and green, I mean white, green and orange, that still support us, our community, and want to see us thrive in certain spaces. So I feel like, you know, there's a best of both worlds thing kind of going on now, whereas it wasn't back then. So, you know, it's all about strategy, just being strategic. And I think one of the greatest things Ashley and Renee could have done in this thought process was by making sure that some of our families were veterans. So we have people that are military trained and, you know, work from that perspective of being, you know, tactical when it comes to certain things as far as creating infrastructure. So I think that was one of the best things they could have thought of, you know, when they came with this idea.
Okay. We got a caller here. Go ahead before we take the caller. Go ahead, complete your sentence.
Yeah. So what I was going to also just share is the actual municipality portion of this, which is why we want to grow to that space, is a part of that protection, right? So every city, every state has an emergency plan, and you have resources to be able to protect your citizens when you are actual township or city. There's always the county sheriff's department, right, that we have the ability to use politics to control by making sure that we are participating and being mindful of who we get elected into the roles of sheriff, as well as federal court judges and our local court judges, our municipal judges. Those are actually mechanisms whereby we can protect our community overall that we usually are not in charge of. When we do have the distinct opportunity to be in charge as mayors or as city managers, that's when you start seeing things like, oh, people are able to take Confederate statues down using executive order, right? Because when you have that structure set up and you have a culture and a community that was designed strategically and intentionally to build it up so that our citizens are not criminalized, our citizens are not victimized, but they're empowered to take on roles and positions of power and opportunity to ensure that we are doing what's best for our citizens. A lot of us have been disengaged from the political spectrum, and because of that, we are under the rule and authority of people who don't have an interest in seeing our residents, our people, win and really have a much more better lifestyle. So for me, even being able to protect ourselves, it does come through that mechanism of having our own city of Freedom, Georgia, and our own police department, where we can have money and funding to have our own police department, because I'm not worried about protecting ourselves from each other because we're being strategic in the community we're building. We need to have this to be really do what their job should be, which is protect us from the outside threats that would try to harm our way of life.
Okay. All right. We got a caller for you guys. 773, your mic is open.
Yes, Ellie, you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Well, yeah, we're here with Mr. President, Mr. President Stephanie. You mentioned about the gentleman in Chicago. So he's here listening, and thank you. Having a great show, enjoying information, and want to thank the ladies for what they're doing. We will be following up. Thank you.
Okay. I think I know. A lot of people have marched, they have protested. And the strategy that the Freedom Georgia Initiative has taken, I think is the best strategy there is. Because if you look at things, most of the high-profile homicides of African Americans, particularly African American males, they've happened on cities on the grid. You know, George Floyd, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Eric Garner in New York City, wherever, Ahmaud Arbery, in those cases. And you can march, you can protest, you can go out and vote, but the best method that I've seen to eliminate that stuff, or at least, yeah, eliminate it, to be honest about it, is to do what the Georgia Freedom Initiative is doing. Go out in the United States, there's, I think, 126 acres of land. Only 3% of the total land mass of the United States is occupied. Only 3% has been urbanized. As many people have heard me say on this podcast before, the United States is basically a rural country. And the Freedom Georgia Initiative, they're setting themselves up in a position where they don't have to march and protest. If they're going to march, they can march on their own 502 acres of land. They can set up their own government. That can be done. Now, let me ask you ladies this. Now, you're not far from Atlanta, a couple hours from Atlanta. Now, there's some people that really need to come out of Atlanta right now because they can't afford to live in Atlanta and cities like Atlanta. But if they would drive an hour or 2 hours away from the city like you guys have done, all right, what would you tell a person who's struggling in Atlanta or New York City or Chicago or L.A. or even Orlando or Miami, Florida? Any suggestions on – well, you guys give tours for one. So any suggestions on that might be able to change – well, at least give thought to, you know what, maybe I need to get out of the city and just go country.
The traffic alone will make you do that here in Atlanta. Traffic alone is like just when we drive to Freedom, it's just like such a breath of fresh air just to get away from the traffic. But, you know, you do see all of this stuff going on with the rental spaces now. You know, people cannot rent a place without spending $2,000 to $2,500, and that's for a 1-2-bedroom here in Atlanta now. And so, but we were just in a place a few days ago where we went to visit another community similar, well, not similar to ours, but a space that are that's intended to, and their rents are very low still, you know, not at $500 for a $900 square foot apartment. You know what I mean? And that's in a rural community. So you do have a lot of areas outside of these spaces that do have cheaper rents and stuff like that.
So what I would like to say, this is Ashley Scott again, is as a real estate agent, you have to have a 2-year plan. You need to make sure that you are working somewhere that is location independent. So that means you might be a telecommuter, somebody who provides customer service or sales from the phone, and all you need is a laptop and a cell phone or a wired phone. That is going to be the best ticket to moving into a space or a place that is rural so that you don't have to worry about your economic livelihood, right? Because most rural areas aren't going to have the same kind of jobs that urban areas have. That's the reason why people are leaving rural areas and moving to the city in the first place for more opportunities. Most industry and corporations are building in urban city centers because they have tax incentives. And so one of the things that you can do as an individual who already has a job is use a USDA zero down loan to be able to move into a rural area. And you can either have a home built, a new construction loan. You can get a new construction loan with an FHA. You can get a new construction loan with a USDA loan. You can do a new construction loan with a VA loan. But you must have that W-2 income for the last 2 years, and you've had to be paying your bills on time. There's a certain level of financial responsibility that you have to have before you can have real freedom in the first place. And now there's some ways and there's some cheat codes when you start practicing group economics the way that we did so that you can speed it along if you are not in a position or have the desire to wait 2 years to get yourself in order. But a legacy and a freedom strategy for moving from an urban place to a rural place is going to start by you having good credit and a stable job that is location independent. You can take that job and that good credit. You can build your house in a rural area, and that home that you desire can be built to your specifications, which is even better, and you can get more land than what you typically will find when you purchase a home in the urban center. You're talking about going from a quarter acre of a piece of property and a neighbor right next to you 12 feet to having 5 to 6 acres or more, and maybe no neighbors nearby, so that you can enjoy a more recreational lifestyle. So there's lots
right.
of benefits to that, and I want people to contact me. I am available. Get with a realtor and make a freedom plan to get out into rural areas, because you will be able to, especially there's an area called the Black Belt here in the South, here in Georgia, where black farmers and families have passed their land down. Some of you from New York, Chicago, Ohio have heirs property. Your grandparents left y'all land. So you need to really figure out what you can do to make that transition.
Ashley, how do people get in touch with you? And for more information about the Freedom Georgia Initiative, social media, give all the links for that.
Sure. So, yes, if you want to get in touch with me, I'm Ashley Scott. You can email me at ashleyscottkw.com. You can visit us on our website at freedomgeorgia.com. You can follow us on Instagram at freedomga2020. You can also follow us individually. I'll let the other ladies tell you guys their handles and their websites. You can also buy my course, How to Buy Land Using Group Economics. You can connect with me again through email, and I can send you a link. You can also schedule a consultation call with me by visiting ashleyscottinspires.com. And then you can call us if you're interested in buying land or if you want to set up a tour. Our number, for some of you who are not electronically inclined, you can call us at 478-353-3455.
All right. Any other two ladies online, do you have information you want to give out or what?
Well, this is the other co-founder, Renee Walters. You can follow me on Instagram at frontpagenay and just stay updated for things going on with me.
All right, great. Great.
And
all right, go ahead, we're listening.
This is Laura Riley Cooper. I can be found on all social media and at my website at AskLori, LORII.com.
Okay. Now, with people in the studio, if you got any questions, we got them here in the studio. They're very busy women. Press 1 if you want to ask any questions of about the Freedom Georgia Initiative. They started out with, well, they saw some land. I'm paraphrasing here. Okay. They got the vision. They went and talked to some friends. They got 19 families together. They purchased 97 acres of land. Now they're up to 502 acres of land. They share a lot of wealth and information. And I look at it as this is the Black Towns Movement 2.0. Oh, let me. Okay, I had to meet somebody. The Black Towns Movement 2.0, because there was a Black Towns Movement back right after slavery for the first probably 60 to 65 years after slavery ended. There was a proliferation of Black Towns that did go up. There were probably about 800, 900 still around. Most of them are really small places that most people have never heard of. But that's okay. But they've experienced, they've had ups, they've had downs. But in my opinion, they're an answer, particularly if you want to live a sustainable lifestyle where, you know, you don't have a house note, or you have a little one at least. Depends on if you build it or not. Now, you know, it might, you know, it, matter of fact, let me ask you this. A lot of people like city life because they're addicted to the comfort and conveniences of the city, like in where you guys live, Atlanta. So now with Freedom Georgia, I'd imagine, because you've got the land already, that you'll have anything that you need that you can get in Atlanta, at least the basics, you'll be able to get it in Freedom Georgia too, I imagine. Could you share that with us?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like we out in the middle of the boondocks and there's nothing. So within 20 minutes, you can go to Walmart. You can, I mean, it's not a club. So that is the conveniences that we would miss for sure. But Macon's 45 minutes away. If you just are about that life where you have to get somewhere that's more urban, there's always, usually within about a 30-minute radius, somewhere to go. And then we do. We anticipate building up our own community and our own spaces and places for, you know, we want to do a farm-to-table restaurant. We want to have a microbrewery. We'd like to have a boutique hotel and a lodge space where we can have a cigar lounge. We can have a place where people, a bar where people can meet and congregate. And it doesn't even have to be the kind of clubs that we are used to having. We can create our own more sophisticated lifestyle right there in those rural areas. And we've always had fun. You know, there's always a juke joint. There's always a bootlegger. We're not going to lose any of the culture that we as Black Americans have always had. We create the culture. Wherever we are is home. And if you can bring your friends and family together to buy land and build a community, you're going to have the spot where you guys hang out when you want to engage and dance. We always have somebody who's the DJ with the playlist. Like, culture shows up and follows us wherever we are.
Got it. Now, what about health and wellness? Because some people, you know, I got to live near a hospital. So anything in the works for that? Not so much a hospital, but at least maybe a health and wellness clinic.
We do have plans for many health and wellness clinics that will be around the city. We also are going to specialize in an ecotherapy program, getting back to nature, like healing your mind and body and soul with nature, as far as forest bathing, animal therapy, horticulture, agriculture, cooking, and just things like that. So we will have all capacities of mental health help in our city of freedom.
All right. Well, folks, they've given us a little bit over an hour. If anybody else in the audience, and we got people that in the studio, if you have any questions, ask these ladies of the Freedom Georgia Initiative. Okay, they're big thinkers now. Okay, and they don't have a victim mindset. So if you would like to learn or know more about it, maybe even join their community, you know, feel free to just press 1, and you can ask your questions directly to them. I know people are taking notes, and we got quite a few people on the switchboard, but press 1 if you're already in the studio. 619-768-2945 is the call-in number. And you can speak directly to these ladies of the Freedom Georgia Initiative. If you've been stuck out there, they've given information during this podcast on how you can get unstuck. And, let's see. We have another caller here. Let's take it. 779, your mic is open.
Greetings. I got to turn my computer down. This is Maika. How are you? So
fine.
Glad
nice to
hear
you.
About your endeavors, ladies. I came on about a half hour late. So I'm a farmer. I'm an organic farmer, and I live in a rural area in Illinois, and I'm interested in knowing what are your intentions towards growing food. Do you have farmers already working with you? What's going on in that area?
Well, thank you for listening and asking that question. We are a part of the Georgia Women in Agriculture Association. We do have one of our family members, Ms. Keela. She recently got her farmer certification along with Steve at the Harbershaw Works, which is a local program here in Georgia that teaches people how to farm. And we also have a young lady from the farm school in Boston who recently acquired 6 acres to be able to build her home and farm on. We also have another young lady, Dr. Cheryl Henderson. She's going to be doing blueberry farming. And many of the people who have purchased property in this initial phase plan to grow some form of food commodity. We also have a design where we will utilize containers for vertical farming around foods such as mushrooms and particularly lion's mane, things that we can use for our own community as well as to sell to our neighbors and regionally as a revenue stream. But more over than that, our farmers, we have consultants that we've worked with, like Mr. Wayne Swanson from Swanson Family Farms, because we have 42 acres that we've reserved specifically for cattle and sheep and chickens. We also have a city plan that everybody should have a garden in their backyard. So when people build their homes, not only are they just building a place for them to live, but they should have a certain amount of their land reserved specifically to grow their own organic foods, such as tomatoes, carrots, corn, you name it, so that we have a self-sufficient community and greenhouses. So we'll have some coop houses and things for our own community garden initiatives where everyone, our young people, our elders, have access to helping to grow the food that we would eat for our own health and wellness, as well as to sell through our farm-to-table restaurant and our local farmers markets that we hope to establish. We're not farming today. We plan to actually start farming in March and begin. Right now we're doing our farm preparations. Our farm preparations. So ideally, we should start to get our first harvest in the spring of 2023.
Wow, that sounds wonderful, just wonderful. I would like to talk to some of the people who are in farming to see if I can lend some of my expertise to what you're doing, and I would like to come down and visit and see and test your land and soil, I mean your soil, to see what is good. I hear you growing blueberries. Up here, we're working on, and L.A., you don't know this, we're working on making this a blueberry county.
Micah, you live in a historic black township with the Pembroke right. Hoffman's Park area. Could you share with the audience, tell us about that, because a lot of people haven't heard of Pembroke or Hoffman's Park.
Well, Pembroke was the place where when a lot of black people moved up north as a result of the run from the south, they went to Chicago. They wanted the farm, so they went out to Pembroke and they started a farm community in Pembroke. But first of all, there was a patriot on the underground slave route who settled in Pembroke. He started Pap Tedder, and Pembroke grew as an agricultural area for African American farmers, and it was always considered a poor area. So even when the government was passing out chemicals, you know, DDT and stuff, to farmers to get rid of it for the war on war on pests and weeds and stuff, they passed up Pembroke. They said Pembroke was too poor. So what happened is a whole slew of farmers from this area developed unique skills in farming, and they're very prosperous here now. There aren't a lot now. There used to be 7,000 farmers in this area, but now they're down to about maybe 10 or 11. So, you know, we're working to come back together and build up Pembroke in terms of its farming capabilities, because the land is choice for farming. It's mostly sand, so that's one of the expertise that these farmers have developed, how to grow on sandy soil. And, of course, blueberries grow well in the sand. We had a lot of wild blueberry patches. It's just beautiful. It's just a beautiful area. We have a high water table. That's another thing. Sisters, I'd like to know, how's your water? Do you have wells? Do you have deep wells? What kind of well water are you using? Do you have rivers, lakes, or streams nearby? But that's a little bit about Pembroke, and you're welcome to come visit me sometimes and some of our farm operations. I started farming in the late 70s in Nashville, Tennessee, and then went to Memphis and then up to Ohio and back to Chicago, where my community set up farm projects for young people in the community to teach them agriculture. Most of my community are demised now, so I'm kind of by myself in terms of that knowledge base that was accumulated. But, yeah, so what's your water situation like, sisters?
So, yes.
Hello?
We are in the Oconee River area, so within a mile of our land, there's Okoochee Creek, and there's a tributary in a stream that actually goes through our property, both through the 404 acres and our 97 acres. So we have lots of water. Our very first well that we put on the property. Can you hear us? Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Our very first well that we put on the property.
How wonderful that sounds.
Look. Yeah, complete that, because they've got to go. But complete that last thought, and then, because they've given us like 30 minutes of overtime today. From what I heard, they're good with their water.
Yes, that's what I heard too.
All right. So look, Renee and all from Freedom Georgia, thank you for coming on today. People that want to reach out to the Freedom Georgia Initiative, they have a website. Just type in any search engine, Freedom Georgia Initiative. They have a YouTube channel, Freedom Georgia. And Renee, you're on Instagram also?
Yes, front page name.
Okay, there you have it. Thank you. Well, look, Renee, I'm going to give you the last word of the day because I know you have to go, and thank you again because all three of you have been very gracious with your time and information. But I'll give you the final word for the day.
I would just say that just know that you can do anything you put your mind to. You can get a group of friends and family together. I don't want you to think that black people can't work together. You absolutely can, and you don't have to have a whole bunch of money. You just have to have a good mindset and good people, and you can do everything you put your mind to. And that is my word for today.
Thank you, Renee. Thank you for Freedom Georgia Initiative and everybody who was a part of it. Particularly the three ladies that showed up today. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
Thank you for having me.